Thank you for listening to this talk given at the Center for Spiritual Living, Midtown, Atlanta.
Oh, what a wonderful world. I was singing to Karen outside on the front porch. Oh, what a beautiful morning. So that's truly what a day like today is. And I was ready to go for a hike, and that got canceled yesterday that April had set up for us, but it was 45 degrees and raining yesterday. So we need both. Oh, what a beautiful world. Oh, what a beautiful morning this morning. My talk today is Beware the Ides of March. Here we are, 15th of March, and so for, I can't tell you, again, I'm going to tell you how many thousands of years we've been saying Beware the Ides of March. I'm going to share that with you, but it's our society that's saying, beware, beware. There are things to be fearful of, beware. But the other side of my talk is feel the fear and do it anyway. Feel the fear and do it anyway. Of course, that saying became popular back in the 80s, and it was telling us what we needed to do to go ahead and beware, beware. The rest of the world is always telling us to beware. However, there's something within us that needs to feel the fear and do it anyway. So I love the opening. The song is beautiful. What Ursula said is absolutely wonderful, is that my talk is truly about fear versus faith. But I would rather mean moving from fear into faith. How do we move from all the things that we're afraid of, standing inside of a closed elevator like that? And I love how she said she went to prayer. She went to God. She went to another thought pattern versus the one that just continually goes on down the road to fear. There was a time where we used to take that fear thought and just kept running down that whole road of fear, and we're very fearful. But when you come to a teaching such as this, you learn to finally stop your thinking that way, because just as Ursula said, you have a choice. You have a choice to turn it the other way and start thinking about God, thinking about something else. So I want to talk about fear and faith, and it starts off with a story that has to do with neither of those things. It's a story that I read about Julie the chimp. It was in yesterday's Wall Street Journal. And I've seen pictures of Julie before, but it was a great story that I read yesterday. And I want to read this to you because I've shared this with you before. If you've ever taken the Emerson classes, one of the Emerson essays is Nature, the essay on nature. But what we learn in there is that all the laws of nature are our laws. If you just observe nature, you're observing our laws as well. That's our nature on there. So they've been studying chimps, and this is what they came up with watching them, but I want you to understand, but by watching them, it's exactly the laws of nature are our laws as well. Culture, race culture, has been studied with monkeys since the 40s, and it was in the 40s that we were introduced to Imo. Imo is the monkey that came up with the 100th monkey theory. Has anybody heard that before? We hear it in class all the time. And what it is there would be tourists that would in Japan that would throw food to the monkeys and everything like that. They would throw these potatoes to them. And Imo was very smart. It would land on the beach and in the sand, and it would be all sandy and everything. Imo took that potato and would put it in the seaweed water mixture and wash it off, and it was a little bit salty, so it had a little bit more flavor, but at the same time, it got rid of all the grit on there. And so guess what? Another monkey started doing it because they were like, what are they doing? Another saw it, and another saw it. Before you know it, 99 monkeys are doing that. 99 monkeys are sitting there and washing the potatoes. But the 100th monkey did it too. The 100th monkey wasn't even on the same island where they were at. The 100th monkey was on a different island. So that monkey started taking the potatoes that it was finding and putting it in the water and washing it off and realizing it had a better flavor. So how does that happen? How does it go from the group of 99 that are here and we're watching each other and we change, but then something over here, they start doing the same thing? That's called the 100th monkey theory. And that's happened before. And what that really says is exactly what our teaching about is that we have one mind common to all individuals. There's one mind. One is what Ernest Holmes gets up there and talks about. One mind common to all men. Now, the same thing has happened in our culture as well, in humans. If you understand what happened with the Wright brothers and coming up with the law of flight and everything, the minute that they came up with the law of flight, somebody in Europe came up with the law of flight as well, exactly at the same time. So race consciousness was ready for clean potatoes and the law of flight that were going on. The Ford with the cars, exactly the same thing. All of that, when human nature minds were ready for those changes to occur, was there a readiness to go ahead? IMO even learned even more. They would throw wheat out at them, and so the wheat would land in the sand, and it would just be a whole group of wheat and sand. And IMO does the same thing. She grabs a handful of it, throws it in the water, and she realized the wheat would float and all the sand would fall away. And then she could just gather up the wheat pieces and she wouldn't have all of that sand in there. So the others followed suit as well. So we learn cultural transmission, how a culture does something. So it was in Star Trek that we saw somebody walking around with a computer in their hand. And so before you know it, hundreds upon millions are walking around with a computer in their hand, and we're doing that. We're just doing it right now. So the chimps love conformity, and everyone does everything the same way. Then someone stumbles on an equally effective alternative, and so that individual marches to a different drummer for a while, and then the behavior starts spreading because nobody was washing the potatoes before that. So flash forward from the 40s studies to a 2007 study, and this is the study of Julie. And there was a study of 12 chimps that lived in Zambia. And Julie started walking around with a long blade of grass in her ear. It was really weird. So the monkey's walking around. No one's ever seen a monkey do this before, and they've never observed this grass in ear behavior. So what they called that is gibbing. Grass and ear behavior. No one's observed that before. The scientists thought maybe she had an ear infection, so she's just picking it up and trying to do something with her ear. When they went and examined her, no ear infection at all. Julie just liked having a piece of grass sticking out of her ear. Guess what? The behavior caught on. Other chimps started doing it. Over the next 5 years, the other chimps did the gibbing behavior, the grass and ear behavior, 36 times. They saw her doing it, they did it. Julie, over those 5 years, did it 168 times. She just kept walking around doing that. Eventually, two-thirds of the group were gibbing. Julie died in 2012. Guess what? They're still gibbing. They're still walking around with a blade of grass in their ear. So I love this story, and I think I want to start walking around with a piece of grass in my ear. So for those of you that know me, I would always have a prop, but I'm going to spare you today and not walk around with a blade of grass sticking out of my ear. But how many of you have seen that picture of that monkey before? Because this story's been around for a while. No one. No one's seen Julie. Look up Julie the chimp. You'll see the gibbing going on there. So Emerson was correct. The laws of nature are our laws. The cultural transmission occurs with fads like, you know, the beards that are going on right now, the clothes, the iPhones. Even last night I was at dinner at La Paria, and I watched a family kind of eating their dinner together, and a three-year-old, and how they love to eat at La Paria's food everywhere like this. And the thing to stop the child from doing all that is the iPhone. Give the kid the iPhone, let him have that. So he stopped doing all of that activity. So it came time to leave, and so this is how the little kid is leaving. And like this, and like this, and running into more. The kid wasn't even taking his eye off of the iPhone. Well, adults do this too. I watch them at the gym, and they're moving from machine to machine, running into the same thing. Then the mother takes the iPhone from the kid, and guess what happens? Scream, 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 scream. So what's better, the kid bumping into everybody and all the furniture, or the screaming? The kid bumping into everything. So they give the iPhone back, and so they do that. So this iPhone thing is a fad. But what I want to talk about is more than just fads that do that, but emotions. And one of those emotions is fear. Do you know what, that we pick up fear? Fear does not exist to us in the womb. We're in that state of bliss in the womb, exactly what Ursula was talking about. There is bliss there. And then, all of a sudden, we have a newborn, there's loud noise, there's crying. There were even loud noises in the womb, but there wasn't fear there. Now there's fear all of a sudden that shows up. This happens when we come out into this world of effect. So I want us to remember that there's an aspect of us that's not afraid of anything. There's an aspect of us that is complete bliss all the time when we were in the womb. There's an aspect of us that is fearless. Just because we came out doesn't mean we lost that bliss. We still have that. There's an aspect of us that is fearless. There's an aspect of us that is nothing but courage. But we have IMOs and Julies in our world that teach us behaviors different way. First, we have IMOs and Julies in the world that show us how to be fearful. So we learn as a culture, the cultural transmission that just happened with IMO and Julie, they teach us to be fearful. They teach us to say things like, we don't have what it takes to make it big in the world. So we learn that. Just stay small with us and stay with the 12 chimp herd. Don't get any big ideas that you can do anything better. Just stay here with us. They teach us that even though the relationship you have in this 12 herd is not so great, just stay here in that not so great relationship. Don't change. So we stay in relationships that are unfulfilling. We stay in jobs that are unfulfilling. We stay in bodies that are unfulfilling because we're afraid of the alternative. I don't know about what else is out there on the other side of this bad relationship. What if it's a worse relationship? What if I'm in this really bad job? What's on the other side of that is maybe even a worse job. So you know what? I'll stay right here. And this is cultural transmission we've learned, to be fearful, to stay where we're at, don't make the change, and we learn this. We learn this, beware the Ides of March. You should be fearful. Now, I first learned this in Cutler Ridge Junior High School in Miami in 1973. Anybody else in junior high had to read Shakespeare in junior high school? So this is the very first time that I hear, beware the Ides of March. You know, and it stuck with me ever since. It was on the Ides of March, March 15th, that Caesar was assassinated. In actuality, he was assassinated on March 15th, 44 BC. So for 2,059 years, we've had a cultural transmission of, you better walk around fearful. Beware the Ides of March. And as in Caesar's case, something bad did happen. For it was a soothsayer that warned Caesar of the Ides of March. That's the play part that we read on. And on March 15th, 44 BC, Caesar was walking through town. He was on his way to the theater of Pompeii where the Senate was meeting. And Caesar passed the soothsayer laughing. And he says, the Ides of March have come. Here I am. To which the soothsayer replied, I, Caesar, but not gone. So the day hadn't finished yet is what he was saying. And sure enough, the minute that he made it to the Senate floor in the theater, there's a crowd to meet him, and it was Brutus who stabs him. And so that's that story that we've learned in the 1700s from Shakespeare. But because of that day, March 15th, 44 BC, we've been said to be fearful. Beware the Ides of March. Some historians say this is the day that the Rome Republic died and the Roman Empire was born. The Rome Republic died that day, the Roman Empire was born. But also too, it was 4 years later, the heir to the throne was Augustus, who on 40 BC had 300 senators executed. And so mainly, he was sitting there saying, okay, this is what needs to happen. And so more fear was thrown in there with the senators, et cetera. But my point is, we've instilled in our culture, you better watch out. Beware the Ides of March. We've passed it on for 2,059 years. And even though I was taught to be fearful before by my parents, the teachers at school, the kids at school, my brother and my sister taught me to be fearful. Anybody else had brothers and sisters to be fearful of? Okay, five of us, that's good. Everybody else had wonderful relationships. Shakespeare taught me too when I was just a teenager. So beware the Ides of March has been in my mind since 1973, and it says to beware, be fearful of what's coming. Be afraid, be very afraid. Guess what? Our religions have taught us to be afraid. Paul speaks of the fears instilled by him by the nuns at the Catholic school. We were taught from the pulpit about hellfire and brimstone. And religions very on realize that fear keeps the masses in line. Keep them fearful. Be afraid of God. Be afraid of the church. Be afraid. We have it going on right now. We have fear running rampant around the world because of religions. So they've taught us this, but I want you to understand that's not our true nature. We've learned that. We've learned that. So if we keep them fearful, they will not rise up. And even when I was learning in school about slavery, that, you know, all the slaves were not with ball and chain and kept on the plantations. They were kept on the plantations through fear. Fear kept them on the plantations. But finally, just like Imo and Julie, some of them rose up and got a better idea and understood this fear is not necessarily our choice. We have another choice. And other people were standing up saying it's not there. But fear's control. Fear does control. Then governments come behind religions. Religions were first. Governments come behind it. They're born. Guess what? Hey, you can control the people by fear. Let's keep them fearful. They learn the same tactic. Let us keep them fearful, and that way we'll control them. So we line up, and we go through TSA, every single one of us. We do this out of fear from our government. Our government says we need to be fearful. You're going to line up at TSA, and you're going to go through all of that. So we line up based on fear. The governments say they're protecting us, so we go on the guise of that, but it was born on fear. But does anyone remember the day when you could walk all the way out to the gate and meet Grandma walking off the plane? Those were great days. I remember doing that. Now, Grandma can barely figure out how to get on the train and go out. We're all stuck in a corral waiting for Grandma to come out. And all of us, because of this fear the government has put in us, we're all corralled. We're all waiting in the same place, waiting for Grandma to come, hoping she figures out how to do the train thing. So we're a society. We agree to live together by certain rules, so all of us have this better life. But I think there's a better way of doing it than versus being born out of fear, that why don't we do it born out of something else? Let us choose something else. It can be learned, the same agreement can be born a different way than out of fear. It can be learned by understanding our true inherent nature. Our true inherent nature is not fearful. Our true inherent nature is not afraid. What if we had a different cultural transmission? What if we tried to change everybody's thinking? What if we had an inherent nature of being fearless? An inherent nature that hasn't been touched by 9/11. An inherent nature that is courageous and full of wisdom and it's loving, just like Ursula's opening treatment. What if we went by that? So in 1987, a mantra was born from a book, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. It's by Susan Jeffers. How many of you bought that back in the 80s? I did too. So feel the cultural transmission of fear, but move forward. Do your own thing. Put a piece of grass in your ear. Do something different. This teaching of the science of mind teaches us to be that hundred monkey. How do we get that cultural transmission to occur? What if we started walking around in courage? What if we started walking around in love? What if we started walking around fearlessly? Others would grasp on, just like in Imo's group and also in Julie's group. Others would catch on. The others are only looking for permission to do the same thing. They fear fearful as well, but no one's given them permission to act any differently at all. So you have one person in the group that starts saying, let's act a little bit differently on that. Let's have a better way of life. Then that gives them permission to say, I've been thinking of this all along, but I haven't had the courage to do this. I'm glad you've decided to do this, Julie. So now the rest of us can walk around with this in our ear. Others are going to grasp it. So I'm a closing attorney, and when someone's moving out of state, I always try to talk to them, why are they moving out? And the majority of them are moving out of state because of jobs. The second most reason is because of family. And finally, I had one couple that looked at me and said, we're moving because of lifestyle change. Lifestyle change? Nobody moves for lifestyle change. How many of us are ready to sell our house, pull the kids out of school, possibly to leave good jobs behind, good families behind for a lifestyle change? And I talked to them a little bit more. Oh, a hand goes up. I love that. So I talked to him a little bit more, and he is a cyclist, and he was on the verge of becoming pro. And they were moving to Colorado, and that's in Colorado Springs, if you know. That's almost one of the world's best places to train on your bicycle. The higher altitude gives you more strength and things like that. So that's what they were doing. He wanted to go from being almost pro to pro. It was a lifestyle change. Yeah, we can ride our bikes here and go out on the Silver Comet. I'm going to go on the Silver Comet this afternoon. We can do that. But he was saying, I'm going to do something even bigger than that. So I remember being astonished by that answer, because I've been culturally transmitted to understand all the fears that go with walking away from a painfully familiar city and move to a city of my dreams. The couple was Imo. That couple was Julie. They were walking around with grass and ear behavior, and I sat there astonished. There's a short, small poem that addresses this. The painfully familiar, I know that place well. It's one of fear's favorite playgrounds. The painfully familiar, I know that place well. It's one of fear's favorite playgrounds. We're afraid of change only because we've been taught that. We're afraid to move on, even though the painfully familiar threatens to consume the very joy of our existence. We'd rather stay in that painfulness area. One of my friends is afraid to move on from a destructive relationship. Another friend of mine is not ready to leave the miserable job that they're in. We become enmeshed in our habits. We become enmeshed in our patterns. We become enmeshed in our realities that don't serve us, and they're actually hurting us. And change is actually terrifying to most of us, much scarier than sustaining even the most unhappy existence. We'd rather stay in that unhappy existence than have the change. So we say in this teaching, feel the fear and do it anyway. Let us get a new cultural transmission going. Let us make that choice. Let us turn to God in the middle of the elevator. Let us do that. It was Jack Canfield of Chicken Soup for the Soul fame that said, everything you want is on the other side of fear. Everything you want is on the other side of fear. I remember Alan Cohen telling a story in his book, And the Dragon Doesn't Live Here Anymore. Gosh, I'm telling on myself of all these 70s and 80s books. The dragon doesn't live here anymore, and it's the same thing. The dragon doesn't live here anymore. I've let go of all those fears. I've moved on to something else. And he mentioned the story of two towns right across the river from each other. So he's got one town, it's called A Bun Dance. There's a lot of love going on in there. There's joy, there's music, there's prosperity going on. There's a bun dance every evening at sunset. So when I first read this book in the 80s, you know what that bun dance was? It was the moonwalk or the electric slide. Today it's twerking. But that's what's going on the abundant side of the river. On the other side of the river is a town called Scare City. And in Scare City, things are fearful. Work isn't good. My body's not healthy. No chance for us to move up. The folks were afraid to move from their present circumstances. Life was monotonous. People were afraid of their minister, their boss, their doctor. And these two cities are just separated by a river. And Alan Cohen was so good, and he says, you know how far away those rivers were? Do you know how far those were? And he says, they were separated by a river that was one thought wide. One thought. To go from scarcity to abundance. One thought. One thought standing in the elevator is all that it takes to go from scarcity to abundance. There's something within us that can surmount all fears, and that's our natural state if we but remember it. We don't remember our natural state. Many people are scared to fly, but you know what? They do it anyway because they know if they get on the other side of the fear, there's a reward there. They are going to go visit their grandchildren. They are going to go and do that. It's worth the struggle to move through fear. But a lot of times, we don't think it's worth the struggle. While we're on this side in scarcity looking at everything, and we try to presuppose out everything that it's going to take to leave this job and get another job and get everything like this, and then it's like, let's just stay in scarcity. We can't do that one thought of doing all that. But we are never beyond our control. Meaning, if we are fearful, we are never beyond the control of that fear. But we are in control. We can be beyond the fear. We all have the power to walk away from damaging relationships. We all have the power to walk away from debilitating jobs, habitual self-deprecation, and any other thing that does not serve the possibility of peace, happiness, and love. And I think that's exactly what Ursula said in her opening treatment. Yes, change is scary, and it's hard for the human aspect of us, but the spiritual aspect is what is nudging us and giving us the intuition that something's not right. Let's move from this place of fear. Let us move from that place. And the other week when I gave a talk, I called that divine discontent. It's the divinity within us that's saying, you're not living life to the fullest that you could be. There's something greater to happen. So change carries with it the potential to revolutionize our lives in ways we can never realize until we're already transformed, already on the other side of the resistance and fears. The Rome Republic never knew it could become the Roman Empire. It didn't know it could go that big of a jump on there. By letting go of the small ideas of that was holding the Rome Republic together, there was something greater to make the Roman Empire even bigger, but they had to get beyond this thought pattern that was there. So what are you ready to let go of? You know, a lot of us have our good life. Our life is very good. And I read this book probably 10 years ago, From Good to Great, and even yesterday, it's still on the bestseller list, From Good to Great. And one quote in there, I read it all the time, says, our goodness robs us of our greatness. Our goodness robs us of our greatness. Our goodness, yeah, I've got a good job. Yeah, I've got a good relationship. Yeah, I've got a good body. And we settle for the goodness of it, not knowing that something greater is ready to be born through us. Something greater. And when I say that, it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be a new, complete different job or that it has to be a new, complete different relationship. Something can happen if you just make one small change and get a greater idea what's going on. Helen Street, a great minister of Glendale, California Church of Religious Science, she's passed on and said, we should revel in change, not fear it. And she said, this is how you do change. What do you want changed in your life? And she says, just draw a circle. Draw a circle. Put everything in there that you want to change in your life. You know, is it the job? Is it this? Is it that? You know, put it all in there. And then turn the paintbrush over to God. God just paints all outside the lines with what that change is. We put the circle there. But there's something within us that's wedding to make the Rome Republic the Roman Empire. Something in within us is ready to make from goodness go to greatness. So God paints outside the line. Look at those items and start just addressing them one by one. It was Buddha who said, change is never painful. Only resistance to change is painful. The universe is in perfect balance. The universe is pushing itself through you and me as individualizations of that balance. It's a perfect balance. It's also, too, a law of growth. That's what the universe is. The law of life is a law of growth. That's within us. So it's pushing us through us to do that growth and to keep everything in balance. Balance does not mean staying the same. Balance means change. When we resist making changes in our lives, life itself will usually make the change for us. The usual one is health. If your job is gnawing at you, I guarantee within 2 months you're going to be down getting a checkup for an ulcer. That's how the universe works. It had nothing to do with the job, and you think my bad job and my bad job is going to come out in my bad job. But no, it comes out, the universe is in balance and gives you an ulcer. That's how the universe works. Why don't you be the change in your life? It's much more scary with us initiating the change, but isn't that better than to reacting that the change is coming and going to be forced upon us? Let us stand in that position. Another one of my friends, I would get together every Friday night. I still get together every Friday night with a group of friends. And every week she'd say, I hate my job. I hate my job. Week after week after week. And on Wednesday of 1 week, guess what? I get a phone call. I lost my job. I can't believe it. I lost my job. I can't believe they fired me. So the universe works perfectly. The universe stays in balance. You keep saying, I hate my job, I hate my job. The universe is going to listen to you. It works beautifully all the time. So you need to turn the hate around to love. And I learned this. If you hate your job, majority of the times you want to walk in and only give 50% of it, of your efforts and everything to the job, because I hate my job, and you only give 50%. Well, the universe is in balance, and the universe gives back how much? 50%. How come I can't make ends meet? How come I, you know, things are going like this? The universe is perfectly in balance with all of that. So what I learned, Kennedy Schultz, the founder of religious science in Atlanta, sat there and said, if you hate your job, you show up and give 110%. Why is that? You're not going to have that job anymore if you give 110%. Why is that? The universe is in complete balance. You'll work your way out of that job. There's a way for that to happen. And it works every time. A very good friend of mine started a church in Kansas City, and he wasn't getting the attendance he wanted, and the collections weren't good, and everything. And he came back and even talked to Kennedy Schultz. I think he talked with Paul as well, and everything like that. And he was just sitting there saying, I hate Kansas City. He said, there's body parts that it's worse than the armpit of the nation, actually, is what he said. So Kennedy, Paul said, you know what? Until you turn your idea about you hating Kansas City, Kansas City's not going to be loving on you. You need to turn that around about loving Kansas City. So I want you to know right now, he's gone through purchasing about 3 different buildings in Kansas City. He keeps moving and growing and doing wonderfully. So the city didn't have to change. None of that had to change. Just his one thought wide had to change for him to go from one place to another place while living right there. We can transform our lives from one full of fears to one of freedom if we just go into faith. We can either live our lives in fear on the Ides of March, or we can feel the fear and do it anyway. It's up to us to do it. We start right here in this center. I love how we say that all the time. In this center, our IMO, our Julie, that change agent for us was Kennedy Schultz. He stuck a blade of grass in his ears to speak. And we all sat and saw that blade of grass in his ear, and we started saying, He transformed a culture, is what he did. And he transformed a culture that thousands of us, you, me, all of us, are now walking around with a blade of grass in our ear because one person said, get a better thought. He said, stop being fearful people. He said, no one imposes fear upon us. Rather, we create it for ourselves in our own thoughts and emotions. He said, we need to realize that we have just as much freedom to eliminate fears as we do to create it. He said, there was a teaching that could teach us to be the change agent in our lives rather than life being our change agent. On the Ides of March, we start a new journey to freedom, this freedom from fear, and a greater participation in all those things that make life worthwhile. It's in that one thought. That journey is one thought wide, but no one can do that thought except you. You're the only one that can do that thought. This journey from fear to freedom is making the best discovery we can ever make, and that's the discovery of our true self, the self that is in bliss that's trying to come out. It's never been afraid. And before you know it, we're sticking blades of grass in our ears. We're the ones showing up in a group saying, be ye not afraid. We're the ones doing that. We're the ones showing up saying that. We're the ones that, where Jesus even says, be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind. That's all that is. Change your thought from this, one thought wide, renew your mind to this thought, change it, be transformed. So what if we're the ones showing up in a culture acting like leaders loving life? When you walk out of here, people will start asking you, what is it that's so different about you? Why is it that you've changed your life? I've seen you change your life in the last year and a half. What is it that you're doing? All we need to do is be the IMOs and the Julies and show up and be that change. We need to be leaders loving life rather than afraid of it. The majority of our friends are afraid of life. We need to be the ones showing up that we're loving it. We're the ones cultivating a greater way to live life. We're the ones saying, feel the fear and do it anyway. Kennedy, you know what? Just like Julius passed away, we're still walking around with blades of grass in our ears. And you know what? It's wonderful. And so are you, and so it is. So we are the change agents. We're being charged as being the change agents from this day forward. Beware the Ides of March. Change that to we love the Ides of March. Oh, what a beautiful world. Oh, what a beautiful day. That's how we need to start every single day, because that's the truth of us. The truth of us is pure bliss. And whatever that bliss is to you individually, it's the universal bliss that's being individualized through you. That bliss shows up in so many different ways. It shows up uniquely, wonderfully, as my bliss, as your bliss. And it's up to us to start understanding where does that bliss come from. It's the universal love pushing itself through each one of us, wanting to come out through us in a beautiful, loving life, in a courageous life, in a life full of wisdom, prosperity, abundance, vitality. That is what's pushing through us. We let go of the small ideas of culture trying to teach us that it's a fearful place to be living, this thing called world, for it's not fearful. And we're the ones that need to change that idea. We're the ones that stand up and say, at the center of my being is the love of the universe. At the center of my being is the courage and the wisdom of the universe. At the center of my being, and I am the one that's going to go out and exude all those qualities of the universal as they show up in me as the individual. Life starts changing in our outward form. Things start changing. Jobs start appearing. People start showing up in our lives that we never knew that we could love before and now start showing up. Our body changes from one of weakness to one of strength and health. This is how it all changes, and it's just with one thought. So we do that one thought right here on this day. We let go of the fear. We feel the fear, and we go on and move out anyway, because we know within us is this divinity. Within us is this universal power. Within us is this one mind that every single one of us is an aspect of. It is always available to us. We can always reach out to that. Even in the midst of standing in a locked elevator, we can reach out to that greater understanding. That's always available to us. We give great thanks for this understanding. We give great thanks for this teaching, that it teaches us that we should not walk around afraid. It teaches us that we need to walk around in courage, walk around in love, walk around as prosperous individuals. That's what this teaches us. We give great thanks for that, and we release this word to law, knowing as we release it, the law responds accordingly. We give 110%. It gives 110% back, pressed down, flowing over. This is the truth for each one of us, and so it is.